Gallagher's gonna have the news.
It's Monday, January 20th. It's LA Podcast.
Martin Luther King Day.
Hey.
First holiday of the year.
A lot of us, it turns out, are working. I always got the day off.
But New Year's Day is technically the first holiday of the year.
That is the day that our podcast came out, is what I meant.
It's Alyssa Walker. It's Scott Frazier. I'm Hayes Davenport. We have really just a disgusting amount to talk about this week, including some stuff that we skipped last week, a lot of follow-up stories from things that we talked about last week. It has just been we've had a decade's worth of news already in the last 20 days. Let's start with LA stories. Alyssa, anything you would like to get into?
Let's just have one piece of good news to balance out the rest of the disgusting. It's not disgusting news. It's a disgusting amount.
Some of the news is
said.
Also disgusting. Yeah, there are some like half decent things like coming up later. But yes, okay. Start with some good news.
Scott and I both rode Metro bikes to this recording, which is really exciting because our hyperlocal podcast network of Metro bike hubs has been completed.
I guess that hashtag Hyperion Hyperlocal. Yes, the podcast, the bike network is complete as far as we're concerned.
Never
leaving this triangle.
Time to hang it up.
I have some friends who have been really encouraging me to go out and do more biking. And I'm always like, I'm really pretty bad at biking. And they're always like, no, it's easier than you think. And I'm like, no, trust me, it doesn't go great. So even on the way over to Hayes's house today, I was struggling. But
practicing.
I'm
Did you get an electric bike?
No. Wasn't available.
Oh, okay.
Next time. I have to seed.
We would request more electric bikes.
Yeah, I have to seed my home station with some electric bikes. Go.
Yeah, you got
to
bring them back.
Find them and bring them home.
Yeah.
And the network is expanding. Where else?
Oh,
yeah,
that was the other thing.
Stations?
Like, we're getting a lot more stations in Silver Lake. Like, Sunset's going to have a pretty solid, you know, network all the way to downtown. Hollywood's getting one, and now there's stations south of the 10, which is really exciting. So areas that don't have a lot of good options, especially when people won't put scooters there because it's not the right demographic for who they want to attract. You might get to ride a Metro bike now, which is exciting. Mm-hmm.
Station just opened in West Adams. Did we have an opening or an announcement of a future station in historic South Central?
Well, Ciclovia is going to be there, the next Ciclovia. And I have a feeling they don't really say much further than what's coming next, but I have a feeling that's where it's heading next, right?
I think that there was one station that was, I think they announced is coming, but maybe not open yet.
So that is super exciting. That was like made my week, an otherwise horrible week in many ways. But riding bikes around makes you feel better.
Scott and I have kind of similar stories, I think. Should I start just so we sort of chronologically, order? Yeah. So we talked about last week about an increased number of sweeps around the city. There was one in Sepulveda Basin that cleared out 100 people. One in CD12 up in the Valley, CD3 in Encino. We didn't even know when we were recording on Sunday how much worse it would get.
Yeah.
But I, through Sela, got a notification, and it was on social media too, that there was a plan for Echo Park Lake they had posted that there was going to be a 5-day sweep at Echo Park Lake. There's probably about 60 people living on the lake right now. A 5-day sweep is unprecedented.
Yeah.
Have never even heard of this being something that was legal.
For listeners of this show who might not be aware with the procedures of how this works, when there is a sweep notice posted, I wasn't even fully aware of this until this week, but the city is basically saying the presence of any unhoused people or their belongings within whatever the posted zone is for the duration of the sweep period can result in confiscation of belongings or citation or arrest.
Yes.
So 5 days, you're saying people cannot basically have their community in this area.
And this was a system that was supposed to have improved somewhat with the new Care Plus teams. We will be talking about this in more detail, but they post the cleanups 3 days in advance. They say exactly how big the territory is, and the time periods are usually like maybe like 6 hours long. They clean up the area and then people can move back in. 5-day sweep, this is like absolutely wild. So I showed up with a bunch of other people on a Monday morning at 7 a.m. in Echo Park, and no one really knew what was happening. We waited for about an hour, and then a park ranger came out because Echo Park Lake is city territory, but city parks division. It's not really enforced by LAPD, although there were a bunch of cops there as well. The park ranger said that Nike was planning a shoot at the lake, and so they needed the northern part of the lake where all the tents are is like a staging area, and they were going to be shooting there the entire week. They got the permit from Film LA. Like, this is just like how it was going to go. people live in.
Don't they have to post that? Like, wouldn't there have been
from film?
They're supposed
film
to post
LA.
For film.
I'm just saying we have filming on our street all the time, and you should have seen the area like blanketed with film thing.
Well, we'll get
this
to that.
I just wanted to point that out really quickly as before you went along.
This whole thing is
so
fall
a guy
apart.
Living at the lake was like, I talked to, there was a film LA person that was kind of scouting the area, and she said that they were filming at the tennis courts, which are on the other side of the highway. They're not even attached to the lake. It's really pretty far away. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really make sense as a staging area. And the guy was like, oh, you know, like, this is just what I was told. Like, I don't know anything about these postings. This is just like what they told me. And the guy was like, no, I saw it to the park ranger. I have video of you posting these. You put these up. And then he showed the video. Both him saying he knew nothing about it and him posting them are both on video. So then someone
kind of just like puts it up and then is like, whoa, look at this sign. I guess everybody better clear out of here. Where did this come from?
And then an activist with Ground Game LA, John Motter, found the production company that is shooting this commercial. They're based in New York. Emailed them to say like, hey, just so you know, this is what is happening. And they wrote a beautiful letter on nice stationery to the mayor's office, the Bureau of Sanitation and Film LA. And they said, we are shooting at the tennis courts. We had no idea any of this was happening with the encampments. We do not want a single person removed from this area. And if you do it, it's against our wishes. Yeah. Like
good for them.
It was
That's
awesome.
Really
it was really, really great. And so basically it got canceled. It was supposed to begin in earnest on Wednesday. I went back on Wednesday and it wasn't happening. People have kind of been like prowling around there to like, I guess, scout it out. But people living at the lake were prepared to like make an example of this. They were not going to go anywhere because this was such an unethical practice. There's so much wild stuff associated with this cleanup. So Mitch O'Farrell posted, first the LAPD posted that there had not been a sweep planned at all by LAPD or City Park Rangers. And people responded like, here's the notice. Like, it went up. It says it's signed by the City Park Rangers.
It says LA Park Rangers very clearly.
And then they amended their statement without a correction. They just deleted the City Park Rangers part and said that the LAPD didn't demand this. And Mitch O'Farrell, council member for the area, posted that he had no idea that he didn't order this and had no idea that it was even happening at the time. And then someone responded to that with a photo of him driving right by into the parking lot next to the protesters and then looking at them for a second and then just like booking it out of there
in the opposite direction.
Yeah. So they were like, hey, isn't this you? And I don't know if you've heard this part. His office talked to some of the activists and told them that he was out there looking for bridge housing sites,
which, let me say, was actually then contradicted by the council member himself in a video that was posted by K-Town for All later in the week when they went to go confront city council about their treatment of the homelessness in the days leading up to the homeless count that Alyssa has been posting about, trying to generate more people to volunteer for because there are low numbers of people turning out for that. But homeless activist groups, K-Town for All, Ground Game, were at city council, and activists, including Tommy Kelly, were there confronting Mitch O'Farrell about their treatment of the homeless in their respective districts. Mitch O'Farrell responded to Tommy Kelly saying, all of us are driving around every day trying to make sure that we are like present and making sure that like everyone is being treated fairly. Like his explanation was, I was aware of it and I was out there because like it's my job to just like oversee what's happening and then drive away briskly. Yeah. So a just complete clusterfuck of a response from O'Farrell's office.
But it was a victory ultimately for the people that were successful in stopping this from happening. And now there was, I think, a much more abbreviated cleanup consistent with how it's been done in like for the last few years, where they had to leave for a few hours and then were able to come back. Scott.
Yeah, but on the other side of the district.
Yeah, it's just staying in Council District 13, Mitch O'Farrell's district that spans from Hollywood down to Echo Park. So I, on Wednesday, following the protest Monday that Hayes was at, which resulted in the successful halting of the sweep that was planned there, I think it was Tuesday evening, Ground Game posted on Twitter, we are aware of a sweep that is planned for the so-called Schrader Special Enforcement Zone around a Schrader, a homeless shelter that is part of Mayor Garcetti's Bridge Home project.
Yeah. And this is like a standard thing where I think every Wednesday they do some sort, basically they historically they've sent people across the street or up the street while they clean up the area around the bridge housing.
So they were asking for people to come out and show support and also like make sure that as they do every one of these, this is really an incredible initiative that these volunteer organizations have taken on as part of the street watch that they do regularly, going out there, making sure that the homeless individuals are not being mistreated or taken advantage of, which as you'll hear from my experience is a real concern, making sure that they have help in moving their belongings to an area that is safe for them to be at during the duration of these sweeps. So I did go out there before I went into work on Wednesday. So this is middle of Hollywood, surrounded by a ton of new development going in. There are construction zones on either side of the major encampment that we were present at, which was at Selma and Schrader in Hollywood. So got out there at about 7 a.m. and the enforcement was planned to begin at 8 a.m. So after talking to some of the homeless residents who are out there, this was probably, I would say, home to about 15 to 20 individuals who have been out there in some cases for like between 5 and 10 years. This is a an encampment of long standing, and it is mostly people who have moved away from Skid Row due to the increasingly dangerous conditions there, both in terms of health and personal safety. So we went out there, we were talking to people, just trying to figure out what they had been told by the city, whether they knew where they could go or anything like that. The general sense was they were right in front of a church there, and the church had told them, no, you can't be on our property during this. They had heard from Lhasa that they could go to a park on Selma where they could leave their belongings until such time as the sweep was over. Police started showing up at about 8:30, and they told everybody who was there. It was the most remarkable, like, ignorance offensive that I have ever seen. They, like, were going up and down the line, basically just saying, we are not doing things the way that we were doing them under the CARE model. We don't know what to expect. You know, we want to work with you, but we're just doing what we're told in the same manner as what you heard from the park rangers.
Yep.
But there was no sense of clarity being communicated from the police officers who were there.
So it was an escalation where, like you said, usually that you can go to this one specific place, you go across the street, you go up the street. Now it was they had to remove themselves, their physical bodies and all of their possessions from the entire zone surrounding the bridge housing for 8 hours.
I want to be very clear though. Like, that is so, in the approximately, I would say, 2 hours between when the cops started arriving and when the sanitation workers actually began shutting down parts of the street, the homeless residents that were there, in addition to about maybe 8 street watch volunteers, we were told a string of different instructions. The first thing that the cops said was not, you don't, it was not, move yourself and all of your belongings outside of the Schrader zone. It was us asking directly whether or not that was what they should do to comply, and them saying directly back to us, we do not know. And so it was creating an atmosphere of confusion where, I mean, really just, I think it is illustrative to imagine, like, if somebody were to come to you, to your house, to your living room, this is, so the first cop that was there, he was saying, you know, like, just think of it like I have a house, and like, if the Department of Water and Power wants to get access to my yard to like trim the trees or whatever, I have to give them access. It's like that. Like, in order, like, we have to work.
Is that true?
That is what he said. And so Tommy and John Motter, the individuals that we've been talking about as part of this street watch group, their response was kind of like, well, like, nobody is coming to you with guns and demanding that you literally move out of your house
under threat of arrest.
Under threat of arrest. So it is illustrative to imagine if somebody were to come to you, to your living room, and say, you have to pack up everything in your living room and take all of it in one trip out like half a mile away
right now,
or we will either arrest you or take everything that you've left behind. And also, we can't give you clear instructions about what you can do and remain within the law. People were starting to panic. Like, people who were on the street were feeling the sense that they were being trapped into a position that would ultimately be dangerous for them, result in the loss of their belongings. Alyssa's colleague, Jenna Chandler, who was there, heard from several of the residents that they had lost like precious items, like items that they had carried with them throughout their adult lives.
And we're going to talk about the story that you wrote
as part of these sweeps. So then just to say, Lhasa came back and it was different individuals than the homeless people who were there had spoken with previously. They contradicted the previous direction. They said, you can't go in the park. Some of the people who had put their things in the park already found that the gates to the park were locked by LA City Sanitation as soon as they arrived. One individual who lived there was threatened that his dog, who was in the park, was going to be taken to animal control, to the shelters. And that was avoided because some of the other individuals were there, kept a cool head, and were able to get the dog back for them. Another police officer showed up, the commanding officer in this area for this operation, and said, the takeaway is, before we were leading with outreach, now we're not doing that. Now it is strict enforcement of 5611, which is the rule that you have to fold your belongings. They have to be outside, like you said, Hayes, of the enforcement zone entirely. There's only one location that you can be within this zone, and it is this parking lot, which is owned by the church, if they give you permission to do so. I personally went in there and talked to them. They said no. They said no. Unless you have prior written permission from the head of spiritual life, then we're not going to let you do that. And I said, well, this is something that...
I am the head of spiritual life.
And I said, you know, like, this is not something that I had the ability to ask about before, but you know, they have literally nowhere else to go. And it was kind of just like, no, that's too bad. So... What ultimately ends up happening, aside from a number of like extremely confrontational exchanges that could totally have been avoided and were a direct result of choices made by our city leaders, which we'll talk about in the context, I assume, of Jenna's article.
Yeah.
The ultimate thing that happened here is that we had hundreds and hundreds of pounds of personal belongings that had to be moved a half mile away across Highland to an area immediately abutting a high school, which again is like a place of dubious legality for this stuff to be positioned. And they had to stay there, contradicting what we had previously been told by Lhasa, that they could just move until sanitation was done with that block and come back. They actually had to be done until they had to be out of the zone until sanitation was done cleaning the entire zone, which is expected to take like 8 hours. But nobody can give you a direct response as to when you can be where legally without threat of arrest or citation.
So let's talk about this article, Alyssa. What Jenna wrote reflects a lot of what Scott was saying, a lot of what I've been hearing, which is the new Care Plus strategy of outreach-led cleanups.
There's like plus guns. Oh, really? That's what the plus means?
Yeah, it means, but initially they were going to be very far removed from the cleanups.
I just never observing knew from, if that was like,
from afar, which has also changed as our experience
has indicated this week. Prestigious care.
Yes. Yeah. That basically that new model that I remember getting an email about live while we were recording and celebrating on
and
this
show. We talked about it a lot,
That they weren't going to be throwing people's stuff out. They were going to be leading with outreach. It was going to be more about actually keeping sidewalks clean. That model is basically no longer and lasted about how long?
I think what we could come to agree on is like 4 weeks from this was Jenna's phenomenal reporting, but I did get to look at some of the material she had. We were getting tips from people that were saying this program actually doesn't really functionally exist, like what you're saying. And we were also getting tips from people that, you know, people who are activists, like what you were saying, just look into this, try to figure this out. And it's interesting because you see a lot of groups of people going to the homelessness and poverty committee hearings and demanding, you know, more, you know, oversight and better treatment of people. But the biggest conversation that happened was actually at a different committee meeting. It was like at the
Hunk.
What's the name of it? Yeah, I don't know what it stands for, but it's like the
Hollywood Unified.
No. It was a council one. It was the Energy, Climate Change, and Environmental Justice Committee. Which why is homelessness policy being determined in this committee, first of all? But that why these discussions that were more about cleaning sidewalks than and trying to make it some kind of environmental argument, right? Because it's about sanitation, it's about all this stuff, are being talked about here. And you have four council members who are on this committee, or four council members who were at this meeting in December, saying that we want an end to these care programs. And some of the quotes were like jaw-dropping. Like, I can't
imagine. Would you like to read some of them?
Oh, all of them? No.
Read all three of them because they are really striking.
The interesting thing about this is that the big conversation that was being had, and then we can talk about this more in a little bit, is like the timeline that seems to have happened is that, and we talked about this when we talked about also a meeting we went to at CD13 in Hayes. So the rollout was supposed to happen October 1st, and there was maybe a slow start, or maybe it didn't get as much funding or something at the beginning, because they talked about wildfires being a problem in the area of the slow deployment. So technically, it maybe wasn't even 4 weeks. I don't know. You know, it was supposed to happen, and then by early December, it was done. So you have this meeting where they're saying that their districts aren't clean enough. There's too much trash, quote unquote trash, and that they don't think that care is the right approach. So we have our new council president, Nuri Martinez, saying, how can we have deployed this program thinking things were going to improve? I appreciate LASA coming into Cruz and developing their relationship, but we can't leave it up to them to decide whether something is trash or isn't. Okay. And then you have, and then saying that their districts are getting, you know, they're not getting cleaner, they're getting worse. Then we have Paul Koretz, champion of the environment, saying, I don't know that we're as concerned about the outreach element. Of course we want it. But if our primary mission is to create a strong sanitation program, it has to take somewhat of a back seat. He said his staffers also had asked to get rid of care. Okay, so it's clear now at least two of these council members, one of them the president, saying that we don't actually want this program to be like this. Right. This is not our goal. And then we have Councilmember Mitchell Farrell saying, we have a mission to keep our neighborhoods clean, safe, and get people into housing. I'm not sure that LASA has that same mission. Huh. It is very unclear to me. We work with LASA. We work quite well with them. But if the decision-making is starting to be taken away from the electeds and being made by folks who are not accountable to anyone, including us, and yet our constituents are the ones who are suffering, that's a real problem.
Constituents meaning, of course,
not the constituents that are actually suffering.
It's, like, it's the most like feeble and arrogant just display of ignorance coming from the city council. It is really infuriating. When you have Mitchell Farrell, like I realized this was a couple weeks ago, but Mitchell Farrell, who like does not even have the decency to be honest about his role in what is happening at Echo Park this week, also saying that like we work very well with LASA, and the problem is LASA is unaccountable to the public and specifically to me as an elected official. This is not the problem with homeless services provision in the county of Los Angeles. It is not that LASA is insufficiently beholden to city council, which is now something that we're hearing quite frequently come out of city council. And Nuri Martinez has a motion to possibly change the entire working structure of LASA, citing the city-county dynamic that it works under as probably out of date or out of step with what city council wants to see in terms of on the ground homelessness response. And it's so obvious to me that like allowing for this procedure, the care policy to be in place for like 4 weeks and then saying things are so much worse now than they were in what, June, is like a total red herring and misdirect that just allows them to blame shift and potentially completely disrupt any ability that LASA might have to develop the kinds of relationships that they know that they need with homeless residents.
Yeah.
I saw that on the ground. The lack of faith that now any of the homeless individuals at that Schrader encampment have that they can trust what LASA is saying. That is damage that will last a long time.
Exactly what the caseworker, I mean, Jenna was able to speak with some people who showed training documents that had changed from September to, you know, later, like you literally like contradicting what they had said, like, oh, you make good judgment when you're deciding what people should be able to keep because it's important if they need something to, like, it's not voluntary, just completely just do it.
Flat compliance.
Yeah, it's just flat compliance. And then what the detective said who was at the cleanup that you saw was that said there's been leniency and now there's not leniency. Yeah, the residents of this community deserve clean sidewalks. We have to allow sanitation to do their jobs. So that just completely proves that the policy has shifted, reverted back.
Yeah.
Right?
And now we're in a place where people at Lhasa, who hate this policy, by the way, they want to be able to make good contacts. They want people on the streets to be able to trust them, reaching out to volunteer activist organizations saying, please help us combat the policies that our city and our police department are imposing. We cannot do our jobs. We need your help. I mean, that to me is really scary. We also can't avoid talking about the timing of this. The count is this week. As you are hearing this, it's Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, depending on which part of the city that you live in the metro LA area. It's on Thursday, on the West LA. I think it's on Wednesday. You can go to theycountwillyou.org. Alyssa wrote an article.
I mean, that's
the
other thing. In the midst of all this, we get an email from Lhasa that they are short volunteers at all these sites. So now we have a year that we know people are being shuffled around or, you know, flat out ignored or whatever. You know, it's like this whole thing about trying to make these numbers maybe go the way you might want them to go.
Yes. But what's so extra horrifying about that is I think it is fair to assume at this point that that's the intention, is to put people into the shadows, make them harder to count, reduce the numbers of the homeless count. That means we get less money for services.
Right.
Like, the number is tied to federal funding.
This count is shaping up to be a disaster. Like, I mean, we've talked about previous counts. We had Dr. Robin Petering on, who has been involved in previous counts. She talked to us about some of the limitations of this type of point-in-time count. But that being said, we are in a particularly dangerous point, this year, because we're seeing our political leaders make intentional efforts to scatter homeless populations, to depress the numbers without actually fixing the issues that are contributing to homelessness that we're seeing. Like, being very involved in this, if we get to May this year or whatever, and they release the count and they're like, wow, it is good news.
Yeah.
It's real. The count is lower. It's 12% lower than it was last year. And it's a result of all of these things that we've been telling you you're doing. Like, what is your response to that as somebody who works with homeless populations?
It was always a difficult number to trust. And this year, I don't think there is good news that I could react to. I mean, and we can also see, I mean, like, you know, look at the eye test. Like, the numbers are, at the very least, only slightly up from last year. But, like, it is worse.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no doubt about it. And so any good news as a result of this count, I think, could only be the product of this enforcement that's going on all over the city. And this is reflective, by the way, of Councilmember Nuri Martinez took her new position as president of the council this year. And in her kind of opening statement, like setting the course for her tenure, she alluded to these new policies and talked about something you'll hear from a lot of council members, taking a balanced approach to homelessness, which basically means balancing enforcement on behalf of angry homeowners with services to try and get people into housing. And balance is actually a good metaphor for it. I'm going to try and do this on the fly. It might not come out well. But if you picture like a seesaw and enforcement and jails are on one side and services and housing construction are on the other side, and there's a marble sitting in the middle of the seesaw and that's the streets, that marble is going to not move.
Yeah.
Like, you need to focus all of your attention on services and housing for a problem of this magnitude.
Yeah.
Enforcement and criminalization keeps people in homelessness longer. It costs way more money. It's like the least productive solution possible. We also did it for decades. And that's why this is happening right now.
Nuri Martinez also in that same address referred to this balanced approach as families first, quote, which I just want to say, I think we really took exception to, in 2019, Councilmember Martinez, who represents the northeastern San Fernando Valley and a number of working class Latinx communities there, her comments in defense of the ban on sleeping in vehicles on city streets, using a lot of the same language, kind of suggesting that she comes from a background where there are people from working class families, and therefore she has a heretofore unknown insight into what it means to be a member of a family in LA. But the reality is, you have homeless families living in your district, sleeping in cars that are now being put on the street. And now you're saying families first as an excuse to further criminalize the families that are living unhoused in your district, and straight up jeopardize their life safety going forward, as opposed to actually trying to help them. This is a bad plan. And right off the bat, Nuri Martinez is taking us in a worse direction than we were previously on. And things were already
previously being like September, maybe like,
I mean,
it's been
bad news, like wall to wall. But this is not the tone that I would hope to see from a new council president. Yeah. It is a retrenchment into strategies that we frankly know do not work. When I was at this encampment this past week, and I was getting to hear from people, there are people living on the street who are, you know, like with a little bit of good luck, a couple of weeks away from being able to find shelter, and are telling me, like, you know, now that they feel like they are being victimized by the construction workers, they've had several confrontations there. Someone threw a lead pipe or whatever you make pipes with nowadays, a metal pipe, out of a moving vehicle at one of their tents. They are afraid of cars driving up onto the road and killing them while they're sleeping, which is something that we have seen happen here. They've gotten into confrontations with city sanitation workers who have sprayed chemicals on them. And they're saying to me and anybody else who will listen, which is few enough people, I imagine, that they would literally rather be shot and killed by police than be put back in prison for being homeless. And that happened, you know, yes. Like we talked about Victor Valencia, who now we have the name for. I don't know if you want to talk about the details of that, but
yeah,
this is happening still.
We speculated last week after a man was shot and killed in Culver City, technically, but like Palms adjacent at a Venice and Sepulveda by police who we read in the LA Times had been called out for a report of a man with a gun. They shot and killed Victor Valencia, who turned out to be, as we predicted, an unarmed person who was homeless.
Holding a bicycle part,
which Police Chief Michael Moore made very clear in his opening statement looked exactly like a gun. And instead of, so there are, of course, different approaches that you can take with this in terms of PR. One is to say nobody who is unarmed and not a threat to anybody should be killed by our police department.
That would be a good thing to say.
Instead, they posted a picture of the bicycle part and they were like, see how much this looks like a gun?
Right.
Like this was the correct outcome to have happened. And nothing will change. They make very clear whenever these things happen, nothing will change as a result of this. I didn't see a single elected official say a word about it this entire week. It was still like egregiously undercovered by our entire local news media.
Michael Moore is possibly, he hasn't been in this position that long, but like possibly worse than Charlie Beck when it comes to actually like having a willingness to dissent about the way that his officers conduct themselves in the public.
And it's like similar to Charlie Beck in a way, they're both kind of a friendly face on this, what is like extreme violence compared to like Daryl Gates. You kind of knew what you were dealing with.
Yeah.
And it was easier for the federal government to come in and say, okay, we need to like make some reforms here. This person is obviously an unhinged psychopath. But these new, like these guys are like very sophisticated in their approach to things. They seem like nice people. And that's kind of why often they're put in these positions. But the reforms are non-existent.
Well, if you watch the press conference about crime stats, which I did regretfully, they paint this very sunny picture of the amazing year we had and crimes were down across every group and every type of crime and the city is so much safer. And then you get to the end of the press conference and then they do a couple like questions. And it's not until the questions that reporters are asking, what about Vision Zero? That's technically not a victory. And then someone asked about crimes.
Well, those aren't crimes.
Yeah, of course not. No, we know that. And he held up his phone and said that, you know, victim blaming. It's also victim blaming for people apparently who get shot who are, you know, experiencing problems.
Yes.
But then someone asked about violent crime and crimes against people who are homeless are also up. That you could not, and it's not up a little bit, it's up 24%.
Right.
So that you could not make that a part of your press conference and say it's, and like what you said, it's not, it's because being out on the street, is a dangerous situation. You could get hit by a car when you're sleeping. You could be assaulted by someone. You know, this is like it's going up because there are more people on the street. And until they want to confront that is okay in some way, that you are going to have some 3 people per day dying across LA County every day just because they do not have access to a safe place to sleep, that you could not bring that up in your crime wrap up for the whole year. I mean, that's astounding. And then blame the people basically for being on the streets is kind of what it's about.
And I would just want to say, like, to reiterate, I feel like I constantly belabor this point, but like when Michael Moore was chosen by Eric Garcetti to replace Charlie Beck as head of the LAPD, one of the largest law enforcement entities in the entire country, the rationale that was given, the description that was given of him in the press by Garcetti, by the media, was this is a data savvy guy. He
chief egghead.
Yeah, right. And what, honestly, we're at a point where it's like, what is the point of even bringing that up? Except it's just like, I guess the alternative is not being able to say anything about him. There's like nothing else to say. But what his stats based leadership has given us is like 50% plus one of pedestrians who get hit by a car deserve it. Mm-hmm. So
I guess like 100% of people being assaulted who are experiencing homelessness also probably deserve it, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's the only way I could read that answer.
His highest profile things to date have been a blanket defense of drivers who kill people with their cars and that they should just stay at the scene of the crime and there's no crime committed. Stay at the scene of the collision and there's no crime committed. That the officers who engaged in a literal cross-county pursuit that ended in the death of Melly Corrado at Trader Joe's did nothing wrong. There's nothing to see there. And a variety of on-duty shootings, such as the one that resulted in the death of Victor Valencia the other day, where the video of him posted on Twitter, I think we'll put it up with this episode, in front of the police commission. He's so bold in his defense of this officer's action, really prejudging the outcome of the investigation that should be undertaken by the police commission. It's hard to watch, and it is hard to accept that this is what leadership of a modern law enforcement agency should look like in 2020. It seems like he is failing leadership tests on an almost daily basis.
But you compare him to Alex Villanueva, and what Chief Moore is doing is how you get it done in terms of not having to implement any reforms. Alex Villanueva, if you're too like bombastic about it, if you like come off like a jerk,
right,
then you get like cracked down on by elected officials. But Chief Moore is like a friendlier version, and so he's able to get away with stuff with basically impunity.
He plays within the very broad line of rules that are available to him.
Good news associated with this. First of all, shame works. Councilmember O'Farrell took a beating for these sweeps over the last week, and his response was sending out shower trucks that we had asked for with CELA for a really long time but had never shown up. They're now going to be at like certain large encampments 5 days a week. He was out there washing feet and stuff.
Well, let's check back on whether or not they're actually out there 5 days a week or whatever.
And he tagged all these local activist groups, including CELA, being like, see, like, check it out.
Great.
Yeah, it does work. Fantastic.
And there's another big development that kind of came out. It just happens to be in his district, but Steve Lopez wrote this article about the St. Vincent Medical Center, which has been closed. It's on like 3rd and Alvarado. It's gigantic. Probably, if you don't go by it, you might not notice it, but it really is like a giant hospital facility with a huge parking lot. And I just want to say, they're making this like big like capital push to like convert it into housing. Just make the parking lot a safe parking lot right away.
Do that first.
Yes. And then we can worry about your empire building that you need to make cool facilities and have groundbreakings and all that stuff. But like, open up the parking lot. It's just sitting there.
But Mitch is pushing for it to be converted into housing and services, which it should be. I mean, it's a perfect facility for that. Also, and more good news, at the CELA Access Center, I was there on Saturday, and two people came in who have been put in permanent housing, have moved into housing this week.
That's
because
awesome.
Of their working with our case manager that we have on site. This is the Access Center that we begged for help putting together from council members Rue and O'Farrell. Got absolutely none, but we set it up anyway, and it is working.
Didn't you also get a van from the county?
Yes. Did I not talk about that?
No.
County Supervisor Solis. We got a call. Oh, God. I got to shout them out. So Elise Weinberg and Judy Vasquez from County Supervisor Solis's office got in touch with me, I think mostly from listening to this show, and said, hey, you know, I know like you work with CELA. Like, we have vans. Like, do you want one? It's like, we want a van. We have to rent one every week to drive people to and from the Access Center.
Yeah.
And then the supervisors voted on it. Was so cool to see the supervisor put this forward. It was unanimous. And so I'm sure the process of the van actually making its way to us will take a minute. But that was a hugely positive thing this week.
But isn't, as exciting as that is, doesn't that underline how messed up the situation is? Right?
Which?
I mean, that you have to get, that you're getting a van from the county instead of them saying, and that that you're making a fuss is finally sending showers that you have been doing at the same place.
Right. And I mean that the council members who represent this area felt free to just ignore those requests for years and years. And like, just, it's kind of staggering.
You sent a field deputy to our initial announcement and like presentation of our proposal for an access center. And then we waited 400 days and we did our
job. Oh my gosh. So
here's a quiz. Gil Cedillo in city council this week, a council member for District 1, said this is an equity and justice thing. What was he referring to?
I know this. Should I let you guess, Alyssa?
Wait,
I think I know what it is.
At a council meeting?
At a council meeting. Was referring to an issue that he wanted something done about this week, and he said this is an equity and justice thing.
Road diets?
He's referring to something in his district.
Oh, in his district.
A pretty large property in his district where he feels like a criminal injustice was committed in 2017 specifically.
And I'm still going to go with road diets, I guess.
Scott?
Would it be the Astros sign stealing at the World Series?
Oh, correct. God.
The city council is voting to have the Astros title vacated and given to the Dodgers.
What was his quote?
That this is an equity and justice.
No, he had another one. Dude, I don't need publicity, I think was what he said to the person interviewing him.
Let's talk about the next gen bus plan. We didn't talk about this last week. It was unveiled, the big new plan for improving the frequency and ridership on our
buses. Was the whole
buses.
Plan unveiled, or was it just kind of like a broad strokes? Yeah. What? So they posted something at like on Friday night, like super late. And that was so they it could be up in time for discussion at the board meeting, or it was ops, right?
Right. Yeah. So Metro posted it is at least the significant structure of this next gen bus reorganization plan. It's kind of a mouthful to say that they've been working on for the past several years. They did post it on Friday evening. Their kind of default is to post everything Friday at 5. They have to post them at least like 2 days early
for
Brown Act rules. And they kind of just are in the habit of doing that on Friday evening just so that whoever wants to be mad about it can do it into the void.
Spend a weekend to cool down and then...
In this case, though, it kind of made it... It kind of dampened the effect of what was... I think widely viewed as a pretty solid plan that Metro has put together. So this next gen plan, the impetus for doing this is that they have, of course, seen bus ridership fall at something like 25% since 2013. So they are trying to figure out how to modernize the system, which hasn't substantially changed. It hasn't been changed as a whole. And in any case, since the early 1990s when the rail network was first reopened here. So the highlights of this plan as it was unveiled by Metro, it would result in, Alyssa, I think you had the exact numbers for population, but it's a massive increase in terms
basically of... Basically doubling, I think, right?
The number of people who have access to a bus line that is considered frequent all-day service. So...
To like
83. Yeah, that's
like
right.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Which is amazing. They were saying a huge amount of Metro service is concentrated on something like 20% of the lines, which if you have probably ridden Metro in the past, you are likely aware of what those corridors are. They're Wilshire, they're Vermont. They're these relatively small number of major arterial boulevards that cross the LA basin and other major corridors like Ventura Boulevard in the Valley. But the way that Metro is thinking about approaching this is by putting a lot of existing service onto those corridors, making service much more frequent than it exists all day, not just during the peak periods. That was one of the focuses of the study, was how many of these trips are not being served when they easily could be, when car traffic is relatively lower off peak, but the Metro headways are, you know, 30 minutes or an hour for the bus, which nobody's going to wait for if they have an alternative. So that is the top line change, putting more service onto these existing corridors. The second part that really bears calling out is, in order to make sure that bus service is substantially better than what it is today, they are proposing a lot of changes to how the like physical infrastructure of bus service in LA County will look. So that means they're talking about consolidating rapid and local bus service into single line services on individual roads. They're talking about consolidating stops because a lot of, if I were to use Sunset Boulevard, which I take the bus on every day, as an example, a lot of the bus stops there are maybe like an eighth of a mile apart, mm-hmm. which is really close.
Yeah.
And for all but the most impacted riders, it is not a significant burden on them to change it, the distance that they're walking to.
Especially if the frequency is boosted.
Especially if the frequency is boosted.
Yeah. So, and only the locals stop at those very close together stations. Been so consolidating.
I bet they'd split the difference in some of them. I think they would move, like on the, if you take like the 704 and compare it to like the 2 and the 4, I would assume that they wouldn't, they would kind of like merge enough of them that it wouldn't just be rapid, because rapid stops are pretty far away.
It's not just rapid stops. Yeah, some of them are, I mean, if you look at the 720, which is one of the two rapid services that will remain under this plan, those stops are like a mile apart. But the
opposite issue of your destination is in between two rapid stops. And and otherwise, like you're just on a local that is just
my
like
question. The other thing that was really cool about it was that you would have the number of people who could walk to stops would increase like somehow. So the percentage of people who had a high quality stop with a bus coming at a certain frequency would increase. And actually, when you look at those numbers, it's already like pretty good how much of the county you can actually get to transit. But it's like what you're saying, that like on walking and biking, like a last mile situation. But if you, it's coming in 30 minutes, you're not going to obviously take that bus. So this will not only improve and hopefully improve the paths of getting to those stops as well, looking at the stops as being these, you know, this radius around every stop and saying, what can we do to improve the experience to get to these places, to wait for the bus, to make all of this the best experience possible, since you know you are close enough.
So lastly, I think the last key point for this, and then I want to get your guys' feedback about what you think about this and if you're, what your concerns would be or whether you're hopeful about the results of this. But the last key point, I think, from the next gen plan as released by Metro would be that they are proposing at least significant improvements to the number of bus lanes that are available in LA, to the number of bus services that offer all door boarding, which is where you can pay with your tap card at the back door instead of having to line up at the front door. Speeds up boarding, makes the bus go faster. Things that would generally speed up service. That's proposed as like a second phase implementation item. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Doesn't that need to happen? Okay, so the two questions I had. Doesn't that need to happen first? And also, some of the numbers just struck me as can't possibly be real, that 49% of the transit riding population is waiting, you know, less than 10 minutes for a bus. I mean, my lived experience being someone who is out there waiting for these buses, I can tell you that 10 minutes is usually about the average, you know, and I'm someone who rides the system almost every day. I just kind of couldn't believe some of these numbers sounded so good already, and then couldn't think how we could possibly get to the next level unless we prioritize the infrastructure improvements first.
Right. So there is a lot of concern I have also about the ordering of these things, because as I was actually speaking with somebody recently who said, you know, like phase two never happens, basically, you know, like this is it's where you put the things that are just not ever going to happen.
Or that you don't really have control over in Metro's instance.
And Metro that's a good point. Can do it for all door boarding, right?
Metro can do all door boarding.
Yeah.
So but the bus lanes is that
bus lanes and
the
also things like shelters, you know, bus shelters. I mean, they don't have any control over that either.
An important consideration is, and I think probably a key factor for what they are proposing here, is that the service changes that they're talking about come from reorganizing service hours from low performing bus routes to higher performing bus routes. So one way to look at it is that Metro is putting the cost neutral, relatively speaking, items into phase one and the things that would cost money into the second phase. That to me doesn't resolve all of my concerns, because we're talking about an agency that more than any other in all of Southern California is flush with cash. They have the cost to do all door boarding is relatively paltry compared to what they spend on anything, really. This is an agency that spends billions of dollars to build hugely expensive rail and highway projects all over the county. This is something that they could do if it were a priority. It's not clear to me that phased implementation makes sense there. There have been a few Metro board members, really only Mike Bonin is coming to mind right now, who have indicated that this should be something that Metro prioritizes in order to improve the customer experience, the rider experience on Metro. But otherwise, it doesn't seem like it has been anyone's priority in particular. I'm concerned about that because this has already been a stumbling block for Metro in the past in terms of improving speeds, getting partnerships with cities to put bus lanes down. We have four city council members who sit on the Metro board, of maybe three and the mayor, but none of them seem like they are about to suddenly stick their neck out to start putting bus lanes down on these mostly in LA city bus corridors. So I'm concerned about that. It does It does seem like it's a good plan, though, at its most basic. It seems like it would improve things to me.
Yeah. You two know way more about this than I do, and the numbers look great. But my feeling was kind of similar to what the LA Times editorial board wrote, which was, great plan. We need somebody with the will to implement this thing.
Yeah.
And like so many, this could just be added to the pile of the mobility plan and Vision Zero and the High Injury Network and every other plan that Metro and other agencies have put forward that are good if they were actually implemented, which our city electeds, for the most part, have totally refused to do.
Yeah. And I mean, even just looking at Metro, we had a guest on not that long ago, friend of the show, Jessica Meany, who works with Investing in Place. And she has been a long-term advocate at Metro of putting out policies of the type that Metro could use to improve service, improve equity outcomes for transit riders. So even just looking within the walls of Metro, we could point to like four or five individual plans that have just not gone anywhere. They've had a bus lane plan for bus network that I believe predates Measure R, which was 2008. So that has not been implemented. There was a complete streets plan that was intended to encourage active transportation access to rail stations across the county. That went nowhere. There was like the arterial plan to actually get better bike infrastructure. Like these are all plans that Metro has put out over the course of the past decade plus. And without the backing of the political appointees and the political officials who are on these boards, they're just going to languish and go nowhere. And to speak of Jessica Meany, she brought up a very good point on Twitter, I felt, which was, why are we talking about keeping service hours for our buses flat? So we are moving, like I said, we're moving under this plan, low performing bus service hours to higher performing roads. And that's on balance, that's a good thing. It's a step in the right direction. But the other question is, we have severely neglected our bus operations in the city and in the county of LA. And should we accept that we can't actually put more money into the bus network? We just have to rearrange what's already there. And that's not as clear to me either.
I think the most encouraging thing was seeing a lot of big bus transit activist people like all over the country being like, this is a good plan. This is, and also people like tagging their own mayors and being like, why aren't we doing this? I was like, oh, that's
finally
when we're getting held up to the standard. I mean, I
usually
think everyone,
we have to look at like Indianapolis. Yeah, and be like,
literally,
oh,
Indianapolis is doing amazing things, and everybody should go look at what they're doing with their bus representative and changing their frequency of their buses. But I agree with you that I don't have any faith in this current council. Metro board, yes, some people, great, but the city council, where it is going to come down to fighting for these bus lanes and all,
literally
rubber and road. I don't see that now, but the good news is things will be different in a few months and
pretty soon.
Maybe
40 days is the primary. Who knows?
Maybe it'll be a priority.
Yeah, these plans are different from, I think, some other ones that the council just chooses to ignore, where often the members will just gleefully incinerate them.
Right.
Like, will be outspoken in, like, throwing them in the garbage.
Well, what would be good to see, since I know the SB 50 stuff is going to be, they're probably going to have another, you know, do we support SB 50? And I'll be like, no. And there was an SB 50 forum in South LA this week where like Koretz and Wesson all got there and they said no on SB 50.
Holly Mitchell said no.
Yeah, she said no.
Jan Perry said no.
It'll ruin our, it'll turn our Dubai. I don't even know. It'll be the next coming of Dubai. Anyway, but it would be great instead of focusing your effort on trying to slam SB 50 in the next 2 weeks of the city council to bring this up and say, we all want this bus plan to be our priority. And we will do everything we can to make it happen.
SB 50 got taken off the shelf by Tony Atkins and got a little just blew some of the dust off of it. It is no longer under Anthony Portantino's hope chest. Where is it now? It's going to see the floor.
I think it's in rules, right? That's the committee she oversees. And they could have done this last year. It's just something I wanted to mention briefly. But it's
but now
back in play.
It still has to get the vote on the floor by
end of the month, I think, still. Yeah.
And nobody has any idea what's going to happen. Yeah. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week on LA Podcast. Bye-bye.